Greetings, lovely folks of this blue planet we call Earth. How are you? I'm Farida, and you are listening to the Slow Dive Podcast. Today, we continue our series, Beyond Archetypes, a roundtable on women's evolving identities. This is where we explore women's layered identities through cultural lenses and life stages, from the archetypes of maiden, mother, and crone to the complexities of the Madonna-whore dichotomy. Each session dives into how these roles shape and sometimes limit women's lives and self-perceptions. We invite our guests to share their insights and experiences to illuminate our audience on the multifaceted roles women experience throughout their lives. Every woman is unique. This roundtable offers a space for community, connection, and reflection. Let me introduce you to today's group of brilliant and beautiful ladies. First guest, Tanya Muhammad, producer, host, and community builder. Tanya Muhammad is a Karachi-born storyteller and global citizen who grew up in Canada, the U.S., and Saudi Arabia, but now calls New York home. With the passion for connecting people and ideas through powerful storytelling, she has over 15 years of experience in media production, content development, marketing, and event management across media and nonprofits. Tanya was most recently the host and producer of Undiscarded, Stories of New York, a collaboration with the City Reliquary Museum in Brooklyn and Citizen Race Car. The podcast garnered critical acclaim, winning a Signal Award for Best Indie Podcast 2023, an Anthem Award Silver in Education, Art and Culture, and a Webby nomination for Best Indie Podcast Limited Run in 2024. Her other shows include Act 2 New York, which celebrated New York's art revival post-pandemic, and The Big Shut-In, which documented diverse global experiences during pandemic isolation. Her current projects in development are a music podcast on Karachi's famed nightlife era and New York's lesser-known immigrant communities. Tanya thrives on uncovering subcultures and quirky lesser-known histories using her superpower of building community through creative collaboration. Tanya's work bridges the past and present with creativity and empathy. Welcome, Tanya. How are you?
Hi. Thanks for having me on.
Wonderful. Okay. So first icebreaker question to our first guest. Is there a flower that represents you? What is your favorite flower and why?
Ooh, that's a good one. You know, I hope this doesn't reflect poorly on me, but I love cactus flowers, you know, flowers that bloom from cactuses, just because, you know, it's like a hardy, you know, situation. It's not necessarily someplace you're going to see, expect beauty. And there's a lot of beauty in the desert as well. So hopefully creativity stems from the same thing.
I love that you said that because it's so funny. My production company is called Sirius, which is a desert cactus flower that blooms in the desert at night. And that's what I'm named after.
We're simpatico.
Yeah, where beauty thrives in harsh conditions and still survives. So yeah, I love that. Very great. Well, thank you for joining us. Moving on to our next wonderful group participant is Becca Spencer, screenwriter, producer, actress. Becca Spencer got tired of not seeing more meaningful and rich stories representing people of color, especially stories representing Black women. Guess where she fits in? So she decided to do something pretty extraordinary to change the narrative. Becca became the change that she wanted to see. Rooted in Dallas, Texas, by way of Atlanta, Georgia, she immersed herself into screenwriting by attending writing workshops, table reads, reading and studying screenplay books on structure, and watching instructional videos on YouTube. All of this while earning her psychology degree at UTD. She's tenacious and she knows how to hustle. Now, some people assume Becca is just a grit girl raised in the South, but she has a grit to never give up. Instead, she finds creative ways to tell unique and compelling stories. By the way, she loves eating grits smothered in butter too. Becca is a co-founder of a small indie production company, Fearless Arvo Motion Pictures LLC. She has written, produced, and has worked on several film sets. Her first screenplay, Andromeda Jones, won a screenplay competition in 2016 and was produced by the Dallas Film Alliance. In 2022, Becca wrote and executive produced award-winning script, Lotus, which was nominated in the Best Texas Narrative category at the 2024 Denton Black Film Festival. In 2023, Becca was hired on a on as a staff writer for Watts Products LLC and is helping develop an 8-episode TV series for the Breakout production company. Welcome, Becca. How are you?
Thank you. I'm doing well. Philly, Dallas.
Yeah. Okay, Becca, same question for you. Is there a flower that represents you? What is your favorite flower and why?
So my response might be a little similar to Tonya. It was always a traditional flower. I love Phothos ivy plants. So that would be my spirit animal or spirit. And it's because they're very hard to kill. They're very tenacious. So I as an artist, I feel like I've always had to be very, very tenacious. I'm sure all of us have had to be in our craft in one way or the other.
Thank you for joining us. And we will now move on to another lovely lady at our round table. And that is Eugenie Stokes, actor, producer, filmmaker, founder. Eugenie is a multi-talented educator, actress, and filmmaker who has worked in entertainment industry for the last 15 years. Her directorial debut documentary short, Free to Be, and an official selection of the 2021 Toronto Film Festival, Denton Black Film Festival's People Choice Award, and Michaud Film Festival's Best Documentary Short, dives into the lives of four individuals from the LGBTQIA community and their push for social justice and racial equality. Eugenie has produced short films such as Puppy Love for Snapchat Tribeca Film Festival and feature films such as Double Down Miami Film Festival. She attended Marymount Manhattan College in New York, where she obtained a BA in acting and costume design with a minor in history. Eugenie has styled and produced content magazine covers for companies such as Forbes, Interview Magazine, and Hearst 17 Magazine. She's produced film, TV, and commercial content in collaborations with companies such as Newhouse, Sony, Amazon, LA Tech Week, and Amp Beauty. She is continuing to work with LISC by Direction, a doc that oversees efforts to address the homelessness and housing crisis here in Los Angeles, with the focus on affordable housing solutions. Eugenie is also dedicated to creating space for women to be their beautifully imperfect and messy selves, while often commenting either directly or indirectly on mental health in film, both in front and behind the camera. Welcome, Eugenie. How are you?
I'm good. How are you?
Fascinated, but I'm doing fine. Okay, same question for you. Is there a flower that represents you? What is your favorite flower and why?
Well, I have a couple of them, but my favorite flower, maybe it's because I'm obsessed with Prince, is the lotus flower, because it's built, and I think, which is very similar, it's built out of like such mess. And it takes years for it to make, and then something beautiful out of all the messiness that we've all gone through in life, which has been considered mess, but just like the beauty of us and women and us procreating and creating life in all aspects, whether it's on screen, off screen, anything we touch, we're procreating. And I think for me, the lotus flower, it thrives and lives in like the muddiest places. So I think that's my favorite.
Nice. Last but not least, my friend Becky is joining us from Dallas, Texas. Becky is a filmmaker, mom of two, actually, IT production support, basketball mom, amateur filmmaker by night, also loves puzzles, fiercely creative in cosplay, and always trying out new things and new experiences. And I had the pleasure of knowing Becky through a film we did in the 48-hour film challenge. So welcome, Becky. How are you?
I'm good. How are you?
Doing well. Same question for you, Becky.
Oh my gosh.
Which flower would you be and why?
So I am probably not a plant person. Probably the only one on the call. I'm sorry. My mom was a huge plant person. So I do like roses, and I like them because when we were younger, my mom used to add the food coloring, make them change colors. So they were always changing. You know, they just absorb what you put into the bowl. So that's like me. I'm like a little sponge. So I like roses. They do that.
I love that.
Both. My sister has them in her garden, and she just plants them, and sometimes they cross, and she'll get like these beautiful colors. So, yep.
Yeah. And, you know, roses are probably the most purchased flowers and most celebrated flowers. So that's a good flower too. Like everyone, like, and there's so many different versions of roses too. So I love that. What's your favorite rose color, Becky?
I like the yellow ones.
Okay.
Yeah. Yellow roses.
Nice. Well, ladies, thank you for all of us joining in today. We will move on to our first segment. As you know, we are doing this Evolving Identities Roundtable. And our last table, we had a diverse group, dynamic group of ladies as well. We touched on many topics, but today we will start with spaces and places, the different spaces we live in. What spaces do you feel like you live in? And think about that. Like, is that a label? Is that a role? Is it a role imposed by society, by family? Is it all of the above? When you think of, tell me about yourself, what are the things people, what comes to mind right away? How do you identify? What are identifiers? What are some of the spaces you live in?
I've always been this person that hated to be put in a box. And people are like, well, what? No, you have to like be very specific. Mm-hmm. And I just started understanding the specificity of like being in certain areas, but knowing kind of exactly what you want and then not accepting like less for that, but then also trying to manage, you have to survive. So I think I feel like I live in this, I'm in a very middle space of my life right now, to where I am 5 feet ahead and like 5 feet back. And so I feel like, especially with like identity and being in this world, as opposed to like filmmaking, you know, it's like, people are like, oh, I think I've sometimes, at least 5 years ago, people are like, oh, you're an actor. And I sometimes would get embarrassed by saying that, because some people are like, oh, what have you been in? And I'm like, well, I've done lots of plays. I come from theater. I come from Booker T. I went to a big high school in Dallas. And so it's like, but people try to put you in the space that they want you to live in versus, No, I'm here to take up space, and wherever that may be is where it may be, or wherever I choose it to be. So I think I'm moving more towards that, which I used to be, but I think LA kind of, I don't know if it jaded me, but even living in LA, my confidence went, and all, of course, all the trauma, my confidence and things that I saw in this business put me in a space of like, I don't know how many times I say I want to quit. But then also at the same time saying, no, we're going to take up space. And although it may have not, we don't necessarily see it the way, I don't necessarily see it the way that, you know, I think it should always be done. But I think it's my job to continue saying, hey, you know, I'm going to take up the space and let's continue to make an impact and something will happen. But also just know that you're taking up space and that you don't have to make yourself small, and you can be as big as you want in the space that you take up. And I'm overcoming all of that.
Yeah. And a funny story I will share with you, Jada, and myself. We met up for a meeting to talk about a project, and we were at a place in out here in Calabasas, and I had picked the smallest table because it was just the two of us to meet up. And Eugenie walks in. She's like, no, we should get the big table. I'm like, well, there's only two of us. She's like, no, we got to take up space. It's okay. And I was like, yeah, why am I playing small? Why am I sitting at a table for two when I can? And what did you say? You said, well, we have purse and computers and our scripts and our, what? You said something that was really profound. And the server was nice about it. And I was just like, oh, let me just take up this much space. She's like, no, I'll take up the whole booth. You know? And I love that. I love that. Because it's true, right? Like, so following on that, ladies, where have you feel like you'd have to like dim your shine or play small in your spaces? And you found yourself playing small and you're like, oh, wow, why did I do that? Has that ever happened to you? or what was the context in which that would have happened?
Yeah, for sure. It's not so much that I've had to play small. It's more like that I've maybe felt small. Mm-hmm. I took a massive career break, you know, between child rearing, my husband launched his business, my dad got very ill. I think I spoke to you about that, Farida. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, I quit a very high pressure job that I was not happy in, and kept meaning to go back and kept meaning to go back. And, you know, it just didn't happen. And then after a while, I think even though raising children is one of the toughest jobs and is 24/7. And I mean, you know, I used to be a project manager, and boy, did those skills come in handy as a mom. When I was entering back into professional spaces, I felt very conscious, mainly because I was like, I'm not sure what I wanted to do. I wasn't sure if what I wanted to do, you know, was not what I did before. And I perhaps made myself small, you know, I'd just be like, oh, I'm just a stay-at-home mom. Oh, I just, you know, would make up those sort of excuses. And I don't think we're there yet, but I like that the industry is sort of switching from that. And you're not stuck in this, like, you know, hustle, unless you're like working 60 hours a week and killing yourself and, you know, responding to emails at 9 p.m. that you're not, like, your value should not be based on what your work is. But in terms of taking space otherwise, you know, yes, I do consider myself South Asian, but I don't think those are the places I only belong in. You know, mm-hmm. I shouldn't be, as someone who worked on a history podcast in New York, I was super intimidated because, you know, I was like, oh my God, I'm not a real historian. I'm not a real New Yorker. And why not? Why can't you take space in that world? You know, if you're coming at it with respect and curiosity and mm-hmm. interest.
I love that. I love how you said that I'm not just a stay-at-home mom or I'm just a mom. Because I think and I'm not going to speak on the mother experience, but yeah, I think my opinion as a childless cat mom, which is an internet meme right now, and I am just leaning into it. I'm totally fine with it. But I think on both sides, it's like women's work, whether it's at home, professionally, women are multitaskers and multidimensional. Yes. And we live in many spaces. So sometimes we do that to ourselves too. Like, oh, I'm just this. Or because of society saying, oh, well, that's not an important job or your job or you can't do it all. Where have you felt like being a mom or not being a mom, vice versa, being a professional or being a creative maybe has limited you in those dialogues, like with people, specifically men, because men will always, you know, and I'm not like hating on men. I'm just saying perspective wise, because in the workforce, I feel, even though I'm not a traditional industry by any means, but as a woman, I'm expected to give more emotionally. I'm expected to give more emotional labor and be more nurturing because naturally I'm a woman and that's what I'm supposed to be like. But that also comes at a price where I'm expected of that and no one else is. So those are some things that are kind of like interconnected sometimes. And I think, why do you think our culture maybe sometimes thinks a woman who chooses to stay at home if she can and it's not out of like, or she chooses to work and it's not out of necessity, maybe she really truly loves what she does and this is something that she wants to pursue professionally. Why does that then make her, you know, does that make her less of a person or less of a mom or no? Or what has anything like that? Have you ever had to like challenge yourself on those ideas from the external community?
When I was like really getting heavy into filmmaking, I would go to networking events and I would either get like two different takes of this. It's like, oh, you're in your late 20s or your 30s and you're still not married and don't have kids. And so people look at you wrong. Like you're supposed to, like society expects us by a certain age to be a mother or a parent or a spouse, whatever. And then on the flip side, as a filmmaker, I'm told, well, if you do decide to have a family, say goodbye to your career. You can't. So it's just like the prices on both of that. It's like, okay, so I could choose to pursue this career in filmmaking, delay. And that was actually a thing with me in the past. And some of that was rooted in trauma and healing. But it was like I specifically for years focused purely on my career mostly. I'm like, I don't have time for relationships. I don't have time to get lost and potentially fall behind. So I had to unlearn a lot of things and find the path that's right for me and trust that if you have a story, if you have a voice, if you have a vision, there's space for you. You have to create it. So, yeah.
Yeah, I get that. I connect with that too, Becca, because my response to everything is like overworking and being tunnel visioned and just like zero, like I must do this. I can only do one thing at a time. This is what's expected. But what I'm learning, and I would probably a little bit older, a lot older than you, I'm learning that it's okay to have like imbalance, but harmony. Like you can't have everything all the time, but it can all work together. So like my focus right now is on this. Okay, maybe next year's focus is something else, or however I can start easing into something new. Same thing for spaces. Like a woman's prerogative is that you can change your mind anytime you want. You can let go of an old dream or old goal or old project just because you want to, not because it failed or it didn't evolve, or because you're like, you know what? I'm done. It's done. I took what I needed from this experience and I'm letting it go. And it's time for a new thing. And I don't know how everyone feels about this. Becky, Tanya, Eugene, and Becca as well. Like where we are in the entertainment industry, we're having to redefine ourselves too. And what our benchmarks of success are, what the goals are. So how have you had to like kind of, where have you guys individually, of course, had to rewrite your map, like rewrite like what you wanted maybe earlier, like a decade ago, what you wanted for yourself versus what you want now? And where did that change of that shift come in? Like, when did you realize, okay, this has to change or something? And it could be anything you want to share, but feel free to jump in.
Yeah. I wanted to piggyback also, but I did the exact opposite. I think I did all the things relationship while trying to balance career and things. And I just got out of a 3.5 year relationship and I was like, oh my God, this is going to be my husband, blah, blah, blah. But then, you know, I don't like to say the word like necessarily jealous, but there, I started noticing I would attract a lot of artists, and at times I end up giving, you know, to my significant other just as much as like my mother would give to me. And that is detrimental to my well-being if I'm not getting the right support that I fully need. And I end up not putting things on hold, but I realized how much my body was in such a fight or flight and has been that way most of my life. And I think that this has been the slowest, worst, but also fastest year I've ever had, because I went through such a catastrophic breakup that I have slept more than I have ever slept in my entire life. But the people that I've been meeting, and I always felt guilty for resting, and I'm like, oh my God, I'm sleeping. What's going on? But it's like, no, I'm healing. And one of my tagline is I was a hoe for healing. Like, I'm like always like all the healing things, you know, the chakras, the this, that, the shamans, you name it, God, all the things. And so I realized even more while taking this time, like resting, I'm like, I can't throw myself at everything, number one. Number two, I am an actor first. And I shared with Phaedra, like I had some catastrophic things happen where I didn't feel safe, you know, in my art. And my safest space was always me being an artist, where I would like go back in a box or hide myself. And I think with certain men in my life, specifically heterosexual men more, they would see that I could go in, work a room, meet people, love to connect with people, and then get close with me and kind of use those relationships. And then I think it'd be a good idea, but then I'm left on E and stuff. I'm still pushing to get stuff done, but it wasn't like going full throttle. And I do believe that I can have it all, and I will have it all. And I want the kids and I want the husband. So I'm in my 30s and I'm like, oh my God, I cry every other week. And my mom is like, calm down. You have enough time to get married and to have children. Calm down. And so I'm like, you know what? I'm just kind of focusing on me, my well-being. And who says you can't? Because I have a friend that's like, oh, you can't have it all. You can have it all, but not all at once. And I'm like, no, there are plenty of people out there. Because if you have the right moolah, that have it all and all at once. Mm-hmm. So it's just kind of like making sure if you have a vision, what I'm also go full throttle on that vision and don't like, I don't know. I'm like, take up as much space as possible. I always get the biggest table at the restaurant. I don't care. Like, we like to order, we're sharing plates. I'm family style anyway.
Yeah, no. Tanya, do you want to add to that?
Or, yeah. Go ahead. Did you want to go, Becky?
I was just going to say, so I'm probably like a different path from you guys. I'm a little older than everyone probably here. But you know, I'm from, a different generation, a different thought. My mom never worked. She was a stay-at-home mom. I thought, oh, I'll be a stay-at-home mom too. It just didn't work out that way. So I followed more the mentality of my dad, who worked two jobs, three jobs if he needed to. So I had kids. I worked, took care of my kids. I, you know, was a Girl Scout leader, did everything. All the other moms were like, how are you doing this? You work, you Girl Scout lead, you do this, you do that. I'm like, you know, you make time for what you want, you know? And at that time, you know, my now ex was going to school. He was doing that. So I didn't do that. And I think I shared that with you, Farida, too, that was something that I missed. But now my kids are older. You know, my baby is graduating this year. So now I am making that time for me to go back to school to see what do I want to do. And I do feel like I can speak from the, production filmmaking side too. What we were talking about earlier, I do see that when women are on set, they do dim their light. I was just recently on a set where I'm not established filmmakers like you ladies. You guys are awesome. But I'm on set and I see, you know, this young lady, she's standing there. She's like, oh, they need to do XYZ. And she said it loud enough. I heard it, but no one else acknowledged. And they're fiddling, they're trying to fix the lights. And I'm like, what happened? Like, nobody heard what she said. And then a few minutes later, it's like, oh, we need to do this. Exactly what she said. So I was like, are they deaf? I don't know. So it is like, you know, she didn't want to, interject, but I'm like, you kind of have to interject. And maybe because I'm older, I'm just like, well, I don't care. Interject, say what you have to say. Let's get this moving. I have a life. I don't have time to be here 5 minutes trying to fix this light. If you know how to fix it, let's fix it and move on. So that's kind of where I'm at. And, you know, maybe I'm just too old or whatever, yeah. But you know, I do see that a lot. And I feel, you know, I feel like I'm more of a motivator when I'm on set. So I am kind of like, hey, she just said this, or he just said that, like, can we try it this way just to get it moving and going? But yeah, I don't.
Yeah, I will say, you know, mother, maiden, and crone, and somewhere between maiden and crone, it's where a lot of women feel like, this circle, what I just kind of created, this round table for this series, it came at a place for me. I was like, okay, I know that I have enough life experience that I can at least share with younger women so they don't have to go through all the bullshit I went through. And also build community where I didn't find community. So like, so one of the things, like, my mom passed away, 3 months ago, and it's been an interesting space to navigate that, right? Like, losing your mom, being the first immigrant child, and kind of the spaces I live in. And I remember like, it's funny, my mom and I always had a complicated relationship because we were both very passionate and spitfires and, you know, really strong-willed women. But there was a gentle side to her, and the side that I remember her telling us when she was not so ill, she used to say, if there's something you want, you need to create it first. So if you want love, be loving, which is funny, but it's true. Give that first. If you want forgiveness and you want acceptance, be forgiving and accepting. If you want to be in community, build community. Don't wait, if you're feeling all those things, for it to happen to you. And one of the things I realized that I was missing out on, because I was no longer identifying as a married woman, or I didn't fit into the married couples groups, then I didn't fit into the emerging filmmakers in their 20s groups, and I didn't fit in the mom group. I was like, where is my community? You know, because also I think Tanya, you and I talked about this previously on another topic, but like also like with culture and race and ethnicity, that also plays into it, right? Like
most so, definitely.
Yeah. Like I live on a little bit the fringe of the South Asian community. I'm very much South Asian. I'm very much Muslim, but my friends are very diverse. So I was like looking for like, okay, what are the spaces I live in? Cause I kind of hop around. Like I don't really, you know what I mean? Like, so anyways, my point is that, yes. The community aspect, this is like our modern day quilting circles, or that women really do need that. And if you're in the mother, maiden, and crone, whichever you fit in, I'm between maiden and crone. And because I'm not a mom, mother and crone, because I'm not a mother, I just feel like I missed out on sharing stuff. So I'm like, this is my version of like kind of facilitating that. But anyways, I'm going on a tangent. How has your relationship with aging changed since you were younger, though, to talk about the maiden, mother, and crone, and where we kind of fit into that timeline? Has your relationship with aging changed, Tanya?
It definitely has changed, because, you know, when I was younger and I used to look at my mom or her friends, I used to think like, your life is over at that age. Like, oh, they're so old, or, you know, I'm almost going to be 50. So I'm not sure what everybody's age is here. And I sort of started completely from scratch in my late 40s on a completely new career direction. And that is not something I really thought was possible, you know? Mm-hmm. And I think the thing about getting a little older is you kind of give a shit less,
yeah.
You know, like, well, of course I was like way hotter in my 20s and like 15 pounds, you know, skinnier, and I had way more energy. I do get hurt a lot more, like definitely have a torn meniscus, and, you know, that's probably because of like brittle bones and all that. So I think, you know, your perception, in terms of what you can do, definitely changes that. You can also go the other direction where you're overthinking and you think you can get too old. But when I finally got to this age, I'm like, wait a minute, that's not old. Now 70 is old, but I guess that's, you know, people in their 70s may be like, why not start something totally new at that age? And I'm hoping you can constantly keep evolving like that. Yeah.
I love that. Yes. Becca, did you want to add to that? Has anything changed since you were younger?
Yeah, I would say on a personal level, I love some women. I just turned 35, so that's, I love it. But I do feel the achy bones more. I feel like I have a lot of confidence in my 30s and wisdom that I did when I was younger. Professionally, it's something I had to navigate too, because when I started out acting, there was a saying like, oh, your peak time as an actress is in your 20s. And then when you're in your 30s, you're like, useless. And it's like, what? How? There's so much to offer. So I think that's mean, it's changed. You have so many older actresses and filmmakers doing amazing, incredible art. I think it still needs to change, specifically when it comes to minority creators and actors and performers. I would like to see more of those, more mature people on the screen doing their thing as well. Age and how I've defined, like piggybacking what you're saying about success, I also had to completely redefine what success was, because I used to think, oh, you're successful when you move to LA, you get your movie in the theater, when that was still the big thing in the theaters, and you win a Golden Globe. That's a success. So I had to redefine through the journey and the pain and the struggles, like, success can be successful on your level. You don't have to be, maybe you're not in LA, maybe you're not in New York, maybe you don't want to know more, maybe you're not in the theaters, maybe you're not streaming on Netflix, but does that mean you're not successful? You know?
I was going to say, I have to underscore, highlight, and bold that, Becca, because where we are in Hollywood right now, that paradigm is gone. I think it's, first of all, you don't have to be in LA to be successful. I can tell you that, because of all the shifting of the entertainment landscape and the mergers and all of what's happening. But yeah, I like what you said, redefining what success means for an individual, and letting go of what perceived success for other people's expectations or benchmarks, right? Because isn't it just the journey of becoming the person you're supposed to be, right?
Absolutely. Yeah.
Yeah.
That's a great way to look at it.
Yeah, I was like, I look at age now completely different, because I'm like, Mom, it's time for you to start your business and do all the things. And I'm like, she's like, girl, I'm working on it. And so for me, first of all, if I had the relationships and the people 10 years ago that I know now, no telling what a shit show it probably would have been, just for me personally. I am at this like place where I feel so grounded and like, this is your voice and listen to your voice, and we have to run with it, because I'm in this, and maybe it's just been this week because I cried all day yesterday, so who knows? But I'm in this space where like, I'm coming to get every single thing that's mine. You know, I think when I was when I first came to LA coming from theater, I was auditioning for like a lot of Disney stuff when I first moved to LA, because I looked so young. Like at 22, I was still looking pretty young. But my life experiences were night and day. And so my feedback was always, your read was very mature. You've gone through a lot. And now I'm starting to see roles on television that I'm like, those are the roles I want to play, because we still are working on it. Those three-dimensional characters where it's not just someone's girlfriend or someone's wife, but like all of the things that it is to be someone's wife that is empowering and someone's girlfriend that is also doing this, 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 and this. I still don't necessarily see as many people that look like myself and look like you women on TV doing that in those power roles. I still think they're push to our other white female counterparts even more. But a lot of it is like the grit is, I'm like, it's a lot of our stories, you know, that we have experienced all of this. And now it's like, oh, now they're experiencing this. I'm like, we've been dealing with this shit our whole life. And so now I'm just like, I'm wiser. I know more. I'm taking care of my face and my face regimen a lot more.
You have a skincare routine.
I'm trying to get all of what those is that? Things.
Oh yeah.
So I definitely look at age as like, now I'm richer in resources and richer in education and time. And I couldn't tell you what I was doing on a set 10, 12 years ago. And now I'm like, oh, all these little things. I get excited to build a crew.
Do you think, though, like in your creative work, being farther in age and on your timeline, that has helped you in performance? And that's for everybody. Like, you know, we're all storytellers and creatives. Like, where has your work changed
I wasn't in the right space. There's a lot of casting directors I haven't met. There's a lot of people that I haven't met that, like, now I'm like, okay, you know what? There were some shows that I would go out for, and I'm like, in my soul, I was like, I know I didn't want to do that. And so now I'm like, I am really focused on making sure I partner with the right filmmakers that are building the right story, that I could see myself flow in and use the relationships that I've met throughout these years to now take it to bridge the gap wherever someone is, that if it's a damn good story, that we can bring it to who we need to.
So you're a lot more selective in choosing projects, collaborators, and roles. Yeah. That's important. What about you, Becky? Where has your relationship with aging changed? And you're also a mom to a lovely daughter who's graduating. Yeah. And so how does that like change your outlook when you have such a successful kid who's graduating from a graduate program and doing amazing things? And you're like, then when you were like in your 20s or vice versa?
I'm so happy and proud of her and my son too. I mean, they're both just like great kids. With me, I guess when I was younger, like when I was in high school, I thought 30 was really old. And so when I hit 30, I was kind of like, okay, every year is just a plus year, right?
Yes.
Because I didn't think I was going to make it to 30. I was like, now I'm 30. So every year I'm just like, okay, this is a plus year for me. And every, like, especially now since being divorced and I can kind of manage my own life, manage, you know, my own funds, and I kind of have control over that. I feel like Eugene said, you make smarter choices, right? You can kind of focus and direct your life the way that you want. I don't feel like I'm in the 50 plus club as well, but I don't feel old yet, I guess. So I feel like I get something new.
Same. I'm like, should I be staying out this late? and doing all these things that I'm still doing.
We need to redefine what's old, you know?
Yeah. Somebody told me like, oh, you're not supposed to wear glitter nail polish after 50 or something like that. I was like, what? I don't, no idea.
The more shine, the more glitter, the older I'm gonna be glitter.
You guys, that's so true, that all these stupid rules that when we were like younger and like just the beauty, the media, the expectations. And as because I'm over 40. That's all I'm going to say. I unfortunately say that only because ageism, unfortunately, is very real and it's hardest on women in this industry.
I did want to say something about that when you were talking about it early. Like, so definitely, it's not without its barriers. One of my biggest fears about when I went back to work was like, oh my God, look at my age. What are people going to say? Mm-hmm. And as much, you know, obviously we could always use more representation. Representation is really improved from when I was in my 20s in terms of the diversity of characters, the type of characters different races can play, which is awesome. Like, for you and me, Frida, if you're an actor, you don't always have to be the doctor.
You can be the drug addict.
Yeah. Yay. So that all is cool. But age is still one of those things that unfortunately people don't want to talk about or think it's cool or things. I work with a lot of older women for my last job in my former career. And some of them are some of the most talented, most amazing people I know. And they said it took them almost 5 years to get a job.
Wow.
Just it at the level it needs to be at, you know, because even for like lower paying jobs, because they had to pay the bills, people were just not interested in hiring them.
Tanya, I'm going to say this and then we'll take a break. It's so true. The external, the superficiality, the what a woman is expected to look like in the workforce, even though that's very much true. And unfortunately, I don't agree with it.
It's not valued. Your experience is not valued the same way as a man is. Sorry to interrupt.
I don't agree with it. No, it's totally fine. it's not, I don't see it like that, but unfortunately mm-hmm. that's how you are seen. And for that to shift, I don't know. That's the problem that I think I didn't realize until I heard it hit a certain age. Yeah. Then I was like, oh man, I could have really maximized my 20s and my 30s had I known, you know, I was going to be completely invisible or like, oh God, that's, don't say your age out loud because, you know, that's just, because, you know, sometimes people have those slips and they'll tell you how they feel about certain age and they have no idea that that's how old you are. And you're like, oh, really? So that's what you think that's like. And you learn about the discrimination maybe or the biases maybe men have or even sometimes
women. Women. Yeah.
And you're just like, wow. Okay, so that's the only reason why I don't publicly share my age, because I feel like that has limited me in some situations. Not because I would limit someone on their age. I don't use that as a qualifier because
maybe it.
Hey there, listener. That was part one of our second December roundtable discussion. Make sure to tune in next week for part two. If you enjoyed The Slow Dive, please subscribe and leave us a positive review wherever you get your podcasts. The Slow Dive is hosted by Farida Rafiq, edited by Drew Franzblatt. Our theme song is Dive by Sarah. Thanks for listening.